You are Locked On Ravens, your daily Baltimore Ravens podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And we return here with another episode of Locked On Ravens. I am your host, Kevin Ostreicher of Ravens Wire, and we return here on Taco Tuesday with our Taco Tuesday guest, and Spencer Schultz of Baltimore Beatdown, here with us today to talk a bit about an end-of-season award show we're going to do here on the show today, as well as getting into his Purple Prospect portfolio in the third segment. Spencer, how are you doing today?
Doing quite well. We've reached the beginning of the real offseason almost, the stagnant part. We're a couple weeks out from free agency. We'll have the NFL opening up their free agent or their franchise tag portion for 2 weeks, finalizing March 13th. So there will be rumors swirling, but for now it's just waiting, watching, and focusing on, you know, some other sports, dabbling here and there, getting through draft prospects and trying to get ready to go for having those mock drafts up and articles to come and all that good stuff and all the draft content that'll come. But first comes free agency, and that's still a little bit out. So here we are.
Yeah, absolutely. It is a little bit of a lull period here right now, but diving into draft prospects is, I know you've been doing quite a bit, and again, we'll get into that Purple Prospect portfolio in the third segment, but just waiting until free agency starts, as you mentioned, and here in the first two segments, we're going to do a bit of an award show, starting off with the offense here in the first segment, and then moving into the second segment, we'll be getting into the defense. So Spencer, starting off with the offense, talking about just the offensive MVP for this team in 2020. Obviously, a lot of players could be up for consideration here. There are some that seemingly are more important than others. But Spencer, for 2020, who was your offensive MVP for this Baltimore Ravens team?
Well, it's a tough one considering the current circumstances. It's easy to say Lamar Jackson, of course, but I'm going to go with Orlando Brown Jr. His value, and the word value in there, was so key when Ronnie Stanley went down. He played so well. Really rock solid once Ronnie Stanley went down and commanding that left side. And you do see how the Ravens obviously did value the left side a little bit more than the right side, because when Ronnie Stanley went down, they didn't keep Orlando Brown at right tackle. They moved him right on over to left tackle. So it showed that they did have some importance there. I think Brown stepped in really admirably, especially in pass coverage or pass protection, pardon me, and didn't have any huge lapses. He was consistent. And while I think that people, you know, have different opinions on Orlando Brown and different things, He's not a real mauler off the line of scrimmage. He's not moving guys off, but you can count on him to use his length exceptionally well, use his size, and he's going to give you 2.5 seconds every single play of whoever he's supposed to block being blocked, pretty much. He came into the season, felt like a little bit out of shape, felt like he was a little slow out of his stance and was kind of laboring early on, but kicked himself into gear and was so crucial down the stretch. Playing through the playoffs, no huge blips on the radar there. He continued to be a dependable left tackle for them there, and that is why the Ravens are in their current situation. Obviously, Lamar Jackson playing extremely well down the stretch. Mark Andrews and Hollywood Brown. J.K. Dobbins is another one as well. But to me, Orlando Brown, at the end of the day, held down the fort, and without him being able to swing over to that left tackle position, the Ravens would have been lost. And if he were to have struggled there, they might not have been able to go on that run and find themselves in the playoffs and get that elusive playoff win monkey off of their back.
Yeah, Orlando Brown Jr. was crucial to Baltimore's success in 2020. There's no getting around that. And the fact is that any quarterback, any running back, wide receiver core, tight end group, they're as good as their offensive line is in some aspects, just because of the fact that the offensive line needs to be hitting on all cylinders in order for the quarterback to be protected to throw the football and not to be rushed, and for the running game to have open running lanes. And for the Ravens, Orlando Brown was certainly a key part of that. I will play the Lamar Jackson card here, though, for my pick, because for Lamar Jackson, for me at least, he is the guy who makes this offense turn and is someone who came into the year with very lofty and high expectations. And to some, his statistical regression was something that a lot of people didn't expect. 2,757 yards passing and 26 touchdowns, as well as another 1,000 rushing yard season, along with 7 touchdowns there. And he struggled early in the season, but really got his footing and was able to turn his play up in the back half of the season, which I think was exceptional for him and his growth moving in to the 2021 season. But Spencer, now talking about the Ravens and their rookies, the Ravens invested a few draft picks in rookies, quite a few to be exact, J.K. Dobbins, Tyree Phillips, Devin Duvernay, James Proche. I mean, the Ravens and their rookies on offense made some contributions in 2020. But in your opinion, Spencer, who was the Ravens rookie of the year on offense in 2020?
Well, it's an easy one. J.K. Dobbins. He was not joking around at all. He led the NFL in yards per carry as a rookie coming in. You know, the Ravens kind of eased him in. And I think that it ended up keeping him fresh down the stretch where he was able to be extremely dynamic. His breakaway percentage, his forced tackles missed, the things that he improved on in pass pro, while it did end up having a huge missed pass pro opportunity against the Bills in the playoffs that wasn't just on him, but also another rookie, Tyree Phillips. But overall, Dobbins was a rocket ship on those motion jet veer looks and motion jet counter looks and all those different kinds of things. And he added an element of speed and breakaway speed to that backfield, as well as just providing energy and burst to the sideline to counter what the Ravens were able to do with Lamar Jackson. And down the stretch, him and Lamar being able to run those quarterback bash options and different things where they're threatening with Lamar Jackson having two blockers ahead of him while J.K. Dobbins has a head of steam running to the sideline was what got them to the playoffs. They pounded those plays time and time again, and Dobbins really turned it on and showed that he was worthy of that second-round investment, having him on a cheap contract for the next couple of years and a well-rounded running back, despite the struggles that he did end up having in that playoff game. But I'm looking forward to see what he can do next year, and to me, he was definitely the Ravens' offensive rookie of the year.
Yeah, absolutely. I have to agree here, Spencer. And for Dobbins, the pick by a lot of people, I think, was scrutinized at first, but then a lot of people came around to the idea because in that pick, the Ravens could have selected Denzel Mims. Wide receiver was a much bigger need, but Dobbins was the number one running back on Baltimore's board, and they love the best player available strategy. And the pick of Dobbins certainly paid off, especially as you mentioned later in the season. But Spencer, now moving into the Ravens' most improved player on offense. The offense had its ups and downs in 2020 for sure, but there were players who grew in their roles in 2020. So, Spencer, who's your Ravens' most improved player from the 2020 season?
From the Ravens' offense, the most improved player had to be Pat Ricard, in my opinion. Pat Ricard turned himself into a little bit more of a versatile player, kicking in, playing some tight end a lot, especially once Nick Boyle went down, showing himself useful in the playoffs against the Titans in the passing game, and just continuing to be a really dominant fullback as well. I believe that he picked up his game and proved that he was worthy of that extension, that he can be a force offensively, and that he does present a unique set of skills and a really incredibly athletic size-to-speed ratio and is able to do some things for the Ravens' offense. So for me, most improved offensive player was Patrick Ricard.
Yeah, Ricard was certainly one of the players who the Ravens needed to step up big time, and he did that. He really did do that. For me, I'm going to go with Gus Edwards, and I know that Edwards has been phenomenal, or at least he was phenomenal throughout the first 2 years of his NFL career, moving into year three, which was his 2020 season. But with his receiving skills, I mean, Edwards was someone who was barely used as a receiver during his first two seasons and came in 2020 and made some big catches for the Ravens. Was only targeted 13 times throughout the entire year, only 9 receptions, but had 129 yards, averaged 14.3 yards per catch, and made some crazy catches. He had, I think, a 30 or 40 yard catch against, I think it was the New York Giants, where he was just streaking down the field. I mean, he's improved his game every single year. He's become more of a force in multiple different areas of both his running game and his receiving game. So being able to continue to improve and showing that in 2020, I was very impressed with Gus Edwards in 2020. But finally, Spencer, moving into most disappointing player for the Ravens offense, because with most improved does come most disappointing. There were some Ravens in 2020 on offense who did not step up to the task for Baltimore. So, Spencer, who is that most disappointing player for you from the 2020 season for Baltimore?
I'm going to go with Miles Boykin. While he did have a resurgence late in the season, I think it took a lot of resiliency and honesty and self-evaluation. But there was a point in the season where he even admitted he was basically running out of plays against the Eagles, or out of the huddle, not knowing what the play was completely lost for a couple of weeks there. The Ravens seemed to really rely on him making a big leap in year two, and he got off to a really slow start. A player who was so incredibly dominant in practice last year, opens up his NFL career with a touchdown catch in his first game, and was able to make some big plays last year, has proved himself to be more of a point forward than, you know, the big, tall, strong kind of 50-50 jump ball guy. Well, he hasn't had a ton of those opportunities, but plays a lot more finesse than he does strength as a route runner. And at this point, you know, you're not sure what you have in him, but it feels like the Ravens can't count on him to make a leap again. You can't just keep going back to that well and expecting him to become this really effective X boundary receiver, whereas he's really only excelled where he's able to have vision to the quarterback, working on in-breaking routes, crossers, digs, slants, drags, things like that. So I don't think that he's quite shown the full use of his ability. And while that, if that's entirely his fault, we're not sure. With new receivers coaches, hopefully they're able to make a leap. But for me, Miles Boykin did not take that leap that so many expected, including myself. And it was disappointing considering what he's done in practice, what he's done at times, and knowing his athletic ability.
Yeah, it seems like we've been hearing for the longest time now throughout practice and seeing it in the preseason that, yeah, Miles Boykin is going to take that leap. He's going to do it. And, you know, it's only been 2 years for Miles Boykin. So it's not like he's had all this NFL experience. He's not entering his fourth year right now. But still, the Ravens really put a lot of investment in him to step up in year two. And he just didn't do it. For me, I'm going to say Matt Skura, kind of going away from Miles Boykin. Skura was someone who suffered a gruesome knee injury in the 2019 season against the Los Angeles Rams on Monday Night Football. And I don't fully think he was 100% healthy, but he gave it a go. He was healthy week one. And between the snapping issues, between him missing blocks and poor blocking ability from him, it wasn't all disappointment. He did make some key blocks in certain situations, but the one I keep coming back to is him getting beat by Isaiah Bugs late in that Steelers game that cost the Ravens a fourth down and a shot to take the lead deep in Pittsburgh territory. And then there are a bunch of others as well. But the snapping issues just continued for Matt Skura. And it seemed like, you know, they were getting blamed on a cut on his thumb and everything. But they were so consistent and so constant that I just feel like Skura is someone who will not be returning to Baltimore in 2021. But we're going to head into our first break here, and when we return, we'll be flipping the field and talking about some awards for the defensive side of the ball. So stay tuned for that, and we'll be right back. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Football might be over, but the NBA, college basketball, and the NHL are in full swing. BetOnline even covers awards, TV shows, and reality TV. There are real-time updated odds and props on almost anything you can imagine. BetOnline has you covered for all the news, scores, and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. And we return here with our second segment of this Taco Tuesday edition of Locked On Ravens. Kevin Ostreicher, your host, still here with Spencer Schultz of Baltimore Beatdown. And Spencer, we just talked about the offensive awards for 2020 for the Ravens, but now let's move on to the defensive awards. And we'll just run through the same four here, starting with the defensive MVP of the 2020 season for the Baltimore Ravens. The Ravens defense was a great unit throughout the entire season and even into the playoffs. They did have some struggles, but it seemed like they were dominant for the most part when they were called upon to perform. So Spencer, in your opinion, who was the Ravens MVP on defense for the 2020 season?
I'm going to have to go with Marlon Humphrey. Marlon Humphrey has still been playing in the slot, which is not his natural position. He is really large to be playing in the slot at 6 foot and over 200 pounds. Not his, you know, best setup to be effective, but he continues to make plays. The 8 forced fumbles with many games. He didn't have any, you know, to end the season. I feel like teams became super aware of trying to go down instead of get yards after the catch because the Ravens were knocking so many balls loose at one point. But he had an impact in so many different games, making his presence known as a blitzer, making his presence known in man coverage, able to move all around the field, do different things, and consistently match up against top receivers when needed to, and had a really outstanding year. And while he, you know, did end up faltering at times a little bit later in the season, he did have COVID at one point as well. Marlon Humphrey ends up being my defensive MVP. Again, proves worthy of the investment the Ravens just made in him throughout the season, and his durability, his explosion, his aggressive demeanor, his tackling, his ability to continuously line up against top receivers and just thwart them and give them a really tough time have been a pivotal point in the Ravens' success over the last 3-4 years since they drafted him. And moving forward, Ravens fans have to be happy to know that they will have Marlon Humphrey locked up for quite some time.
Yeah, Humphrey is unquestionably a phenomenal player on this defense. One of the best players on this defense that is stacked with talent and I think should continue to be stacked with talent throughout the next couple of years. For me, I'm going to go with kind of an unsung hero for the MVP to switch things up because Humphrey is definitely in my MVP conversation. But I'm going to go with Derek Wolfe, the defensive end who stepped into a huge role with a bunch of injuries and some COVID problems on that defensive line. And he played phenomenal football coming over after the whole Michael Brockers debacle, where the Ravens failed Brockers physical. The two parties decided to mutually part ways. Brockers goes back to the Rams, and the Ravens bring in Derek Wolfe, someone who I think the Ravens wanted in Baltimore for a very long time. And Wolfe himself, I think, wanted to be in Baltimore for a very long time. One of the best run defenders in the entire league in 2020, finished the year with 51 total tackles, a sack, 7.5 tackles for loss. I mean, he was all over the field for the Ravens and really filled in a big way when Calais Campbell went down with an injury, when Brandon Williams had to miss some time. I know that he was someone who didn't really expect to maybe play the amount of snaps that he did, and he still didn't play a full complement of snaps, but in the role he was used in, he was a phenomenal, phenomenal player for the Ravens. But Spencer, moving on to the Ravens rookie of the year on defense in 2020, the Ravens first round pick in 2020 was Patrick Queen, the linebacker. They also drafted guys like Malik Harrison, Justin Madubuike, Broderick Washington on defense. Who's your defensive rookie of the year in 2020 for Baltimore and why?
I'm going to go with Justin Madubuike. I believe that Madubuike flashed and showed outstanding explosion, hand-to-hand technique, disruption all across the defensive front. He proved to be a force against the run. He looks like a dynamic pass rusher as well. He didn't get a ton of playing time, and I think Patrick Queen, because of his sheer playing time, is an easy answer, but Justin Madubuike looks like a real player and someone that's going to be a major factor at that three-tech position for the Ravens. I would not be surprised at all if he is a big-time starter and someone who gets a ton of buzz around the league next year. I would anticipate him starting based on what we saw in this past year. I think that he played a consistently high level and had some really dominant moments, standing up to double teams and just proving to be a disruptive force inside. I think that Patrick Queen did have a lot of great moments, but I think he had just as many rookie moments. And while he's super young and has a ton of potential, he did flash that and have a lot of impact plays at the same time. I think Justin Madubuike showed the maybe the highest kind of floor-ceiling combination. I think that he's going to be a big-time player for the Ravens for years to come.
Yeah, when Madubuike got those opportunities, it just seemed like he was all over the field making impact play after impact play. I will take Patrick Queen here, though, for the Rookie of the Year. And I know that Queen was one of the more controversial rookies of the 2020 season throughout the entire NFL, just based off of his performance. Had 106 total tackles during his rookie season, 3 sacks, 2 passes defensed, an interception, forced 2 fumbles, recovered 2 fumbles, and returned one of those recovered fumbles for a touchdown. But as you mentioned, Spencer, the inconsistency with Patrick Queen, it wasn't issued throughout the season. Queen was a dominant player in some instances, but he also had some pretty low lows. For example, in week 3 when he was benched for his performance against the Kansas City Chiefs. So hopefully, moving into the 2021 season, Queen will improve in some areas, but he certainly showed some potential and made some impact plays for the Ravens on defense in 2020. And hopefully, using those performances, those good ones, he'll be able to be a more dominant player, an even more dominant player in 2021. But Spencer, the Ravens definitely had some improvements on their defense in 2020, and some players certainly improved their play. So when you look at this Ravens defense up and down, Spencer, who was your most improved player for the Ravens in 2020?
Two guys come to mind that I'm kind of stuck between. The first one being Tyus Bowser. Bowser had more snaps than he's ever had. I believe he was in the high 500 range and just showed the versatility that he has. He was supposed to be the best outside linebacker in coverage coming into the draft a few years ago, coming out of Houston. And we saw him with 3 interceptions, second on the team, able to make a ton of plays. He stood up well on edge contained duties, protecting the edge there against the run, and was able to be a proficient passer as well, generate some pressure. While it wasn't staggering, he didn't have that many pass rushes. He showed some pass rushing flash for sure. The other guy is, and it's not even really most improved, I just want to give him a shout out, is L.J. Fort. L.J. Fort, you know, the two rookies come in, the first round pick in Patrick Queen, the third round pick in Malik Harrison, as well as him being signed. So he's in a rotational role, but he was the definition of consistency throughout this season, making plays in all 3 phases, an explosive blitzer, being smart in coverage. He was really sound in his hook and curl zones, not asked to play in any man coverage. That's not his forte, but was always in the right spot in zone coverage and executing his assignment. And then, of course, against the run, you know, and screen passes, things like that, blowing up Derrick Henry and goal to go in the playoffs and things like that. It just stood out time and time again that L.J. Fort was one of the most consistently effective and smart and, you know, in the right place Ravens defenders. And I think that he really thrived this year despite not getting, you know, full-time starter snaps. I think that L.J. Fort had an excellent season.
Yeah, what a find LJ Fort was in the middle-ish part of that 2019 season when the Ravens linebackers were struggling. They bring in Fort, they bring in Josh Bynes, and that unit takes off. Fort is rewarded with an extension, and he plays phenomenal football in 2020, even though he wasn't playing, as you mentioned, a full complement of snaps either. And then Tyus Bowser with the improvements he made. I mean, he made himself a lot of money during the 2020 season. So we'll see where he ends up going. Unfortunately, I don't think he will be returning to Baltimore. But again, nothing is set in stone right now. For me, I'm going to say Deshaun Elliott is my most improved player. I've been on the Deshaun Elliott train for a while now, and he finally gets his opportunity to be a full-time starter in the free safety role when the Ravens released Earl Thomas. And he played really well for everything and all things considered with that situation. Had to learn the free safety position in a matter of weeks leading up to week one. And he wasn't perfect by any stretch of the imagination. His skill set is still a strong safety skill set, but he was a physical presence, had some moments in coverage as well. And now, heading into this offseason, the Ravens know that they have two very capable safeties, and they can decide what to do with that free safety position. But even if the Ravens do bring in another free safety to maybe challenge Deshaun Elliott for that role, I don't think that means Deshaun Elliott is going to lose snaps. I think he's still going to be a very important part of the Ravens defense moving forward. But Spencer, I do know that with, again, the most improved player, there does come the most disappointing player. And on defense, there were a couple guys who, again, did not step up to the task in 2020. So who was your most disappointing player on defense in 2020 for Baltimore?
For me, it's probably Patrick Queen. And partially that is due to my own expectations for him and what he was doing at LSU. A lot of times he was just very indecisive, especially against the run, in sitting flat-footed and kind of watching plays develop in front of him. He's an undersized guy at linebacker. You know, he's not a 6'2", 240-pound linebacker. He's a 6'1", 225, 230-pound guy. And when that's the case and you're playing Mike linebacker, you got to be the one pushing the issue. You have to be initiating contact. You can't be letting offensive linemen come downhill with a head of steam. And to me, he sat flat-footed too long for too much time. And he, you know, I would have preferred to see him go blow something up as opposed to just letting blockers get into his face. A lot of times in zone coverage, he was extremely jumpy. And while I was mentioning LJ Fort's kind of consistency, just trusting guys around him to make the play and sitting tight in his zone and letting plays come to him, Patrick Queen needs to take a page out of LJ Fort's book. He was jumping route concepts that were not in his zone, abandoning his responsibilities and assignments. He did that against the Steelers in Baltimore in their first matchup, and it ended up as a touchdown because of it to Eric Ebron. So I think that the inconsistency was there. There's reason for it. He's young. He didn't start a ton at LSU. He did show a ton of potential and show a ton of ability to make impact. He was a dynamic blitzer. He has great sideline to sideline speed when he's able to mirror running backs in the backfield and is kept clean. He's a really dynamic player. Was a great running back in high school himself. And just some little things, you know, when he was front side against zone concepts, you're supposed to generally, you know, take the front side C gap if it's the strength of formation, because you have a backside linebacker that's going to take the A gap. And so many times he would shoot the A gap and then there's no one in the C gap. And then boom, there's a huge run reeled off. Really struggled against the Patriots, who threw a bevy of different run combinations at them. And it was all part of a learning process. But for me, I was generally disappointed, especially in the first half of the season. But he did seem to kind of hunker down and become a lot more consistent. And a guy who's caused a ton of debate, he ends up getting a couple votes for Defensive Rookie of the Year, which I don't want to say they were undeserved. He made a ton of impact plays, but I'm looking forward to him gaining more consistency as he gains more experience in the next couple of years.
Patrick Queen and his lows were certainly a bit disappointing, of course. And again, as you mentioned there, as he kind of learns from those experiences, gets more starting experience at the NFL level, I would hope, too, that he's able to become a more dominant and dynamic player. But he did show a ton of great flashes in 2020. For me, I'm going to say Jalen Ferguson. I, again, had some expectations for Jalen Ferguson, much like you said, Spencer, with your expectations for Patrick Queen. But it seemed like Ferguson fell out of favor later in the year, was inactive for some games. And it was really a battle between, all right, who's going to be the inactive between Jihad Ward and Jalen Ferguson. And it seemed like Jihad Ward just played better than Jalen Ferguson. And now as Ferguson heads into a very crucial year for him, this is going to be year three, I think that he has to show Baltimore that he can make some improvements, because I expected him to be a guy to get more than just two sacks this season for the Ravens and to be more of a dynamic pass rusher, because we saw those traits when he was at Louisiana Tech. he broke Terrell Suggs' FBS sack record, but I think that for the Ravens, they needed more out of him in 2020, and he did fail to deliver. But we're going to head into our final break here, and when we return, we'll be getting into Spencer's Purple Prospect Portfolio, so stay tuned for that, and we'll be right back. With the ever-increasing numbers of makes and models, it's now impossible to stock all the parts you need into a traditional chain storefront. Why endure from pointless or seemingly intimidating questioning and wait while the counterman orders the parts on his computer, choosing only the brand his warehouse happens to carry? You have computers with access to rockauto.com at home and in your pocket. They have everything from engine control modules and brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil, and even new carpet. Whether it's for your classic or daily driver, get everything you need in a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. Go to rockauto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Write Locked On in their How'd You Hear About Us box so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. Rockauto.com. And we return here with our final segment of this Taco Tuesday edition of Locked On Ravens. Kevin Ostreicher is still here with Spencer Schultz. And much like we did here last week, Spencer has been looking at some prospects throughout all of the college football world to see their traits and their draft profiles and kind of see how they would fit on the Baltimore Ravens. He's doing it over at Baltimore Beatdown, so be sure to check out his articles over there. But Spencer, I'm just going to give you the floor. I know you've looked at a couple more prospects over the last week or so, and what have you found out about these guys and their draft profiles and how they fit the Ravens?
Yeah, so the first one that I took a look at was Cornell Powell, the wide receiver out of Clemson, who came up huge in the Sugar Bowl with 136 yards, two touchdowns. One of the more interesting prospects, just in terms of their collegiate career over the last couple of years. Powell is really widely varied in terms of his rating from Rivals and 24/7, as well as ESPN, kind of the three big high school prospect rating websites or whatever you want to call them. ESPN has him as a top 150 player. I believe Rivals has him as a top 35 player, and then 24/7 Sports has him as a three-star player. So really big variation there in what they saw from him. He goes to Clemson. He ends up playing a little bit sparingly as a freshman. Doesn't see a ton of action, but they find it important enough not to redshirt him. So he doesn't catch a ton of passes. I believe he has five receptions in one game at one point against perhaps Virginia Tech early in his freshman year. That was the most receptions he would have in a game over the next four seasons. So he ultimately ends up competing against guys like Justin Ross, you know, T. Higgins and Amari Rodgers and all these different receivers, you know, a slew of receivers that have come out of Clemson in that time and not really emerging. And it gets to the point where Dabo Swinney kind of commented on it ahead of this season. But the moral of the story is that Powell ends up redshirting after three games. He had some sort of quote unquote academic hiccup that resulted in them redshirting him, I believe, in the 2018 season or 2019 season. So he plays three games, has an academic issue. They redshirt him. He comes back, doesn't transfer, stays put, and doesn't end up playing at all, really. You know, plays extremely sparingly, not a ton of snaps, never get any targets or anything. And I think he has 44 receptions through his first four seasons as a Clemson Tiger. And he sticks with it ahead of the season. Reporters kind of asked him about it. He said, hey, you know, I've won two national championships. I like what I saw from Clemson as a high school recruit. I thought it was the best place for me to develop as a man, as well as a football player. I think that things in life are to be earned. And, you know, the easy way is not how I want to have the things that I have in my life, just things like that. And Dabo Swinney basically says that he has had excellent flashes, but when you're going against the best of the best and references the Clemson wide receivers, that you have to bring it every day, and that he thinks Powell can kind of take it easy and not really even notice that he's doing it. And he basically just wasn't winning the competition at wide receiver. So fast forward to this past season, the 2020 season, Powell has a relatively slow start. He has a couple four catch games. Ahead of the season, he said he learned X, Y, and Z, all three wide receiver, X, H, and Z, all three wide receiver positions within Clemson's offense. He explodes. He has over 700 yards and seven touchdowns over their final seven games. He has a dominant 180-yard performance against Notre Dame. He lights up Pittsburgh, you know, all the way through the Sugar Bowl in his final game as a Clemson Tiger. He ends up having 139 yards and two touchdowns, torches Ohio State, almost keeps Clemson in that game at one point. He was open all the time. If they would have just kept throwing him the ball, I think they might have been able to keep up with a shootout. instead of, you know, trying to run their offense elsewhere, because Ohio State had a beat on pretty much everyone other than Cornell Powell. When I just look at him as a prospect, he has good size. He ends up going to the Senior Bowl. He has really strong size, 6'1", 210 pounds. He has 10-inch hands, enormous, like offensive lineman, defensive lineman sized hands. Great hands catcher, plucks the ball away from his body. He's super fluid, super tough to get off of his path. He does everything you want in all three areas of the field. He's not necessarily a burner. It's the only real knock I have, as well as the late breakout. You know, it did take him a long time, and I'm not here to speculate, but what, you know, Dabo Swinney kind of said, he kind of takes it off in practice, takes it easy, and doesn't even know that he's doing it. So those are the only real two things I can find that are knocks on him. I ended up giving him a second round grade. I believe that he is a pretty safe, sound, mature, well-polished receiver prospect. He can run double moves extremely fluidly. He stacks really well. He's tough at the catch point. He breaks tackles. He works well against zone. Everything you want. Checks pretty much every single box. And last year, the guy for me that I ended up, you know, talking myself into more than people were kind of not quite as high on was Justin Jefferson. And when a guy checks every single box, you know, as a football player, for what you want them to do at their position, I'm going to have to be high on them. And last year I ended up saying, you know, I like Justin Jefferson more than Jerry Jeudy because he checks every single box. And Jerry Jeudy had some drop issues and a couple of other things. But, you know, obviously Jerry Judy's still great, whatever. But that was the kind of vibe I got from Cornell Powell. I was like, well, the only things that I don't see are real, you know, world-breaking speed. But you look at the Senior Bowl, and Jim Nagy ends up tweeting out that the fastest player at the Senior Bowl, according to the GPS chips in their pads, was Cornell Powell, who hit 20.57 miles per hour, and that was around the same speed that Devin Duvernay hit on that kick return against the Kansas City Chiefs. So maybe he has even more speed than I realize. So I'm very high on Cornell Powell. I don't know if there's anyone else who has a second-round grade on him. Maybe it makes me look silly, but at this point, super high on him, super bullish. Another wide receiver I took a look at was Elijah Moore out of Mississippi. He had 101 targets at Ole Miss. I know that college statistics and sometimes may be a little bit meaningless, but he had 101 targets. Of those targets, Sports Info Solutions had 88 of them as catchable. He had one drop and caught the other 87. So he had a 98.8 catch percentage on on-target throws. The ball doesn't touch the ground. He has made catches in every way imaginable. Sometimes he takes his gloves off. He had an unbelievable shoestring catch with no gloves on against Alabama. He's the SEC, I think, all-time leader in yards per game at 149. He has unbelievable releases. He kind of reminds you a little bit of Hollywood Brown with just a little bit more size. Full speed cuts. He doesn't feel the need to really vary his pace as much because he can cut on a dime super fluidly. He can make a dig route look like he's about to break on a corner, and then two steps later, he's 8 yards away, completely flattened out with his eyes back to the quarterback. Awesome releases. He has a bevy of a full release package. He can speed release. He can shuffle. He can do anything you need him to off the line of scrimmage. He is a smaller dude. He is mainly a slot guy, but we've seen him win on the boundary. Had a couple beautiful sluggos and some pokos, some double moves, and ends up, you know, being a dynamic threat against zone coverage, against off coverage, which the Ravens end up seeing a lot. So I think that Elijah Moore, I'm not quite done with him yet. I've only watched 4 games, but getting to the point where I'm thinking he's going to be a first round grade for me. And then the final guy that I looked at was Quincy Roche coming out of Miami by way of Temple. Quincy Roche played 3 years at Temple, a guy who's actually from Randallstown, Maryland, so not too far from the Ravens facility. Went to high school in Owings Mills at Newtown High School, so right around the corner from the Ravens facility. Roche goes to Temple. He ends up starting for 3 years after redshirting. He ends up being the AAC Defensive Player of the Year in 2019 with 13 sacks. He is a technician. He is a black belt in the karate hand fighting that is required to be an effective pass rusher. He can be proactive or reactive. He can string combinations of moves together with rips and chops, and he also contorts his body, can win around the corner. Not a terribly big or explosive, you know, athlete in space. He's not fast. He can't catch guys from behind. Not really long. He's about 6'2" and 7/8" at the Senior Bowl, 243 pounds. He has okay length, 80-inch wingspan, I think 32.5-inch arm. So he doesn't have great length or bad length. He's not, you know, really small, but he's not big. But in terms of IQ as a pass rusher, awesome, fun to watch. He can win around the corner. He can win with inside counters. At Temple, he would bull rush a little bit more and use a more of a long arm bull rush. We saw that at the Senior Bowl, but then he transfers to Miami for 2020, plays alongside Jalen Phillips, another transfer who is probably going to be a first-round guy when I'm done with him, just from what I've seen from him, but a dynamic pass-rushing duo there. And Roche wins with IQ, with hand-fighting technique. He is a stout run defender. He stacks really well at the point of attack. He can shed. He beats up on tight ends. You would think, being a little bit smaller, that tackles would be able to kind of bully him out of the way, but no, sir, they do not. So for me, I have Quincy Roche with a second-round grade. I don't see him having any real weaknesses, but I just don't know how effective he can be while being a somewhat limited athlete. Like I said, you can kind of run away from him. He takes really great angles. He knows that he's slower. He knows that he's not this exceptional athlete. So he takes really smart angles in the run game and has learned to compensate with it. But he just doesn't have that freaky burst or bend or athleticism to warrant a first round grade. But I think he's a really, really high floor player. And I could easily see him being, you know, a heavy rotational guy year one, and becoming like a 6, 7, 8 sack guy. Made some plays in coverage, nearly picked off Trevor Lawrence. Smart in coverage, just generally smart all around. So those are the three guys that I've taken a real look at this week. And that's it for the Purple Prospect Portfolio.
Amazing analysis once again. This receiver class is extremely, extremely deep. And while Baltimore has four young guys on their roster, I do think they might take another one, even though I think at the end of the day, Baltimore will take 6 wide receivers. And Roche is someone who could certainly help Baltimore's edge situation, especially knowing the fact that 5 of their 6 edge guys are entering free agency here in 2021. But Spencer, that's all that I have for you today. Thank you so much for coming on the show once again. And when we get back next week, it's 1 week closer to free agency and 1 week closer to the draft.
Yes, it will be. Thank you so much for having me on again, Kevin. Make sure to give Kevin 5 stars in those iTunes reviews, charts, and give the man some love who gives you the best daily Ravens coverage. Thanks again for having me on, and I'll talk to you guys next week.
I appreciate it, Spencer. When we get back here tomorrow, it's more Ravens talk from us, answering your mailbag questions. So stay tuned for that, and I will see you tomorrow.